Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalam Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Sat Nam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanya Wasayake. Hello, may everything be well with you as it is with me. We'll continue on teaching today on the early books in Kabbalah. And before we do that, I will now recite, as I do every day at the beginning of class, out of respect for our ancestors, the Kaddish for the dead and for the mourners of the dead. So please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you were close who has passed away. In doing so, you'll honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yiskedol v'yishkedash me'rabo bomo divero kirase ve'yam l'kmelkase v'kayakon uv'yumakon uv'kaya dekol beis Yisrael ba'agalo uv'yizman koryev ve'imru omen. Yehe shme'rabo mevorak le'olam ole ome omayo Yisbarak v'yistavak v'yisperar v'yisramam v'yisnaseh v'yishadar v'yisaleh v'yishalal shmei dukadsho beraku le'elo minko berkaso v'shoroso tushbekoso v'nekamoso da'amiron be'omo v'yimru omen. Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo v'kayim olenu ve'al kol Yisrael v'yimru omen. O say, Shalom Bimromov, Hu Yashe, Shalom Olenu Ve'al Kol Yisrael, Ve'imru, Omein. Thank you very much. Let's check the recording levels real quickly here to make sure we're not maxing them out. It looks like we're fine. All right. Okay. Now then, as you know, I've been teaching the last, I think, three, maybe four class sessions and teaching about the time of Enoch. Started out talking about just the book of Enoch, and then I had to digress and say, well, let's talk about who Enoch was. And so we talked about Enoch, spent one class talking about him as a man and the mystical significance of him as a man. And then we spent the last couple of sessions talking about the time in which Enoch lived. And we're going to continue doing that today. And we're going to get a little bit more involved in the biblical account of Enoch and from a mystical Kabbalistic perspective. And it's quite exciting. This is very interesting to me, and I hope that that interest shows through in the way that I teach what has been revealed to me and share it with you, and I hope it's exciting to you as well. So, as I said, we'll go ahead and get started. A little bit of swallow of coffee here to wet my throat, okay? As I said, we've been talking about the time of Enoch. And remember, it was the seventh generation of man upon the earth. Seven, meaning that this was the time of completion. As I taught before, I said the number seven represents completion, and I listed off some of the things that are seven. The Sabbath, the seventh day on which God finished the creation and rested from his work, that was the seventh day. There are 7 days in the week. There are 7 musical notes in the scale. There are 7 holy sephirot below the world of emanation. On the Etz Chaim, the tree of life, below Atzilut, the world of emanation, that's the top 3 sephirot of Keter, Chokhmah, and Binah, or king, father, and mother, from whom all of the world comes. There are 7 offspring. Okay, so there are 7 again, and that represents the world of space, matter, time. The lower physical world of man can be represented by 7 versus the upper spiritual world of God. That can be represented by the number 3. But it was a time, this time in the world in which Enoch lived, this seventh generation of man, and remember what we did, we counted off the generations which God had Moshe, our teacher, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher, had him write these down in the Pentateuch, and in Genesis he wrote down the role of mankind, coming from Adam to Seth and on down. So we know that Enoch was the patriarch of the seventh generation. So we trace down those seven generations to Enoch at the time. It was a time of completion, but it was a time of completion without perfection. For evil was mixed with good. Evil was not yet separated out from good, so that the world could be placed into balance and harmony, so that evil could be absorbed and with good in a sort of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis process, okay, to transform evil into good. That could not be done because there had been no separation process. The evil was mixed with the good. And I want you to remember, in everything that I'm going to teach you today, that what I say to you is not just about the affairs of mankind in this world, as represented in the history, in the narrative given to us in Genesis, in the Torah. It is that history, that narrative in the Torah. Remember what we said about Torah, that there's the four levels of the Torah? It is used as a mnemonic device. The narrative is used of Torah is used as a mnemonic device to conceal and to reveal, well, as a mnemonic device used as a key to open the lock to the hidden away secrets of God. There we go. So the narrative of the Torah, especially in the book of Genesis, but in all of them, the stories of the Torah is a key that opens the lock of the Torah. Inside the door, inside the inner levels of the Torah, we find the secrets of God, what's going on in God's mind. So what we see happening in this narrative about Enoch, actually from the very beginning, from Adam and then Nakash and Hava and Cain and Abel and then Seth, and right on down to the time of Enoch and the building of the Tower of Babel, or Babel, however you want to say it. And then three generations later, in the tenth generation, to his great-grandson, Enoch's great-grandson, Noah, and the destruction of the world by the great flood. All of this is not merely a narrative of the history of man. Indeed, it could be argued that it was not a history of actual mankind at all. Although I'm not one who will argue that. It could be argued that this is totally an outer garment, concealing an outer historical garment, if you will, concealing an inner spiritual, psycho-spiritual history of the struggle within God's mind. And we got into that a little bit in our last session. So I just want you to keep that in mind as I start teaching today, because I'm hoping to tie it up in the end, and this will all start to make a larger, greater sense than we've ever seen before, that, or at least that you may have seen before. And this is what Kabbalah is all about. This process defines what Kabbalah is. All right. So, it was the seventh generation of man upon earth. It was a time of completion. Completion of what? Well, we're going to get into that. That's what's going to be revealed today. Okay? But it was not a time of completion with perfection, but a time of completion without perfection. So man had been brought forth on the earth. The earth had been made. Man had been brought forth upon the earth. The heavens had been made. The angels placed in the heavens. But even though it was complete, it wasn't perfected. So in one way you could say it wasn't completed, because you can't have completion without perfection. Well, evil, whichever way you want to look at it, I don't care. For evil at this time was mixed with good, was not yet separated out so that it could be transformed. and reconciled to the good. Okay, here's what I mean by this. Let's look at the time of Enoch on the earth. At that time, there were three spiritual genetic lines being transmitted. Three spiritual approaches to existence being transferred through three genetic lines among the human beings of the world. What were these? First, there was the holy pure seed of Adam and Hava, descended from Seth down to Enoch, the patriarch of the seventh generation of the righteous. So there was the line of the righteous coming from the pure seed of Adam through Seth. There was the mixed seed of Nahash, the serpent. Remember we talked about the serpent in Gan Eden? Nahash is the Hebrew name for the serpent. Nahash, we also said, you must remember, is Samael. And we're taught in Oral Torah that Samael, this is the doubting angel, the doubting part of God's mind that argued with that part of God's mind that said, I know what, let's create a world and in that world place man. So Samael was that part of God's mind that doubted that and said, no, let's not do it. And in Oral Torah, we're taught that Samael rode on the back of Nahash into Gan Eden and is what influenced Nahash to tempt Hava, Eve, into getting Adam and getting them both to eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. But we're also taught that Nahash in Oral Torah, seeing Adam having sexual intercourse with Hava, saw that she was beautiful and he desired her sexually. And so he had, as soon as Adam left her after inserting his seed into Hava, Nahash crept over and had intercourse with Hava. And so he deposited his seed into Hava. And so in the womb of Hava was simultaneously the seed of Adam, which is as it should have been, but also the seed of Nahash, who was under the control of and indeed was the earthly representative of Samael. And that seed should not have been in there. So there was the mixed seed, the mixed semen, the mixed sperm of Adam and Nahash in Eve. And then it says in written Torah that a son was born to her, and his name was Cain. For she said, I'm going by memory now, so it's not a direct quote, but I'll paraphrase it. She said, God has given me a man. God has made me a man. Words to that effect. And that's a reference to Nahash, because Samael is the doubting side of God's mind. Okay, so we have this three spiritual genetic lines that we're talking about. The first is the holy spiritual, a holy pure seed of Adam descended from Seth. And that forms the line of the righteous in the world. And then there's the mixed seed of Nahash, who is in Eve as a result of what I just related to you. And two children were born as a result of that. And that is, first was Cain, second was Abel. Cain, we are taught, carried into his DNA mostly the seed and the likeness and temperament and proclivities of Nahash, the serpent. And so descended from Cain, and of course he murdered his brother Abel after he lusted after Abel's wife. And so he killed his brother. And so we can see that wickedness, that evil in Cain. And then, of course, he's banished from Gan Eden and he's sent into the world and he's marked so that no one will kill him. And God places his mark upon his forehead. And from Cain, who goes on to build a city, and his son Nimrod builds cities, and so on and so forth, through Cain and his descendants, are the down to the seventh generation, we come to the seventh generation of the wicked. So all of the wicked come from the side of Cain, which he came himself from the side of Nahash. And they are the ones who rejected God's authority and built a tower, the Tower of Babel, to proclaim their greatness. And this is all in the time of Enoch now. Remember, the seventh generation of man on earth. Okay, and then there's the mixed seed of Nahash. Again, because of this intercourse that Nahash had with Eve that resulted in Cain, it also resulted in Abel. Now, he wasn't wholly pure, having leaning toward the side of Adam, nor was he wholly evil, leaning toward the side of Nahash, or Samael. He was mixed, and as it says in the Zohar, he was like good wine mixed with bad. Okay, and so from that time down to the seventh generation, we come to this time, and his line could be called the seventh generation of followers, those who follow after people who influence them. Which, of course, who would we say would do that? We'd say that it's either the descendants of Seth, the righteous people, they would follow, or the descendants of Cain, the wicked people. And both the descendants of Seth and the descendants of wicked try to influence the descendants of Abel, because they are the followers. Okay. All right. Also in the world at this time were the Nephilim, which, remember, Hebrew, it literally means the fallen ones. This is mentioned in Genesis 6:4. And in Genesis 6:2 are mentioned also the Bnei Elohim, the sons of God. These are the two names for the same set of people. The sons of God would be angels, and the Nephilim are the fallen angels. These are the angels Uzzah and Azazel. Remember, we mentioned them in our last class? And their followers, because there were other angels. Uzzah and Azazel were sort of the lieutenant angels under Samael. They were cast out of heaven because they sided with Samael in refusing to kneel before Adam Kadmon. Now, I don't know if you recall or not, but I taught briefly that Adam Kadmon was the image of God in man. Remember in 1:26 of Genesis, Bereshit, Elohim says, "Let us make man, let us make man in our image. Male and female made he them in his image." Made he them. I was just paraphrasing that. Well, this is the image that's being talked about here. In our image, let us make man. The word for image in Hebrew is tzelem, T-Z-E-L-E-M. Tzelem means image. And so the image of God would be tzelem ha-Elohim be-Adam. Tzelem ha-Elohim be-Adam. The image of God in man. And this is primordial man, made before the Adam was made on the seventh day. This is the primordial man that didn't walk on the earth. This is not Adam, the earthly Adam and Hava, Eve. This is an archetypal image, a prototype, a template for the holograph. These are all kind of good images for what this is, upon which, sort of like a spiritual genetic image, blueprint, followed. Which is followed in the making of all physical human beings. Okay, now this Adam Kadmon existed prior to the making of man on earth, as I just said. And God asked the angels to kneel because this Adam Kadmon would be a higher being, a higher divine being than the angels. And they all did this, of course, except for Samael, who said, I shall not kneel. He and his lieutenants Uzza and Azazel and all of their followers were then cast out of heaven. All right, and here's where we get this. Sansino edition of the Zohar, Bereshit, meaning Genesis, section 1, page 25b, which I'll read from now. It's about a paragraph. Quote, of the Nephilim, literally meaning fallen ones, it is said, and the sons of God saw the daughters of man, that they were fair. And that's in Genesis 6:2. These form a second category of the Nephilim, already mentioned above in this way. When God thought of making man, he said, let us make man in our image. He intended to make him head over the celestial beings, which that's a code word. Celestial beings is a code word for the angels, who were to be his deputies, like Joseph over the governors of Egypt. That's a citation to Genesis 41, chapter 41, verse 41. The angels thereupon began to malign him, meaning Adam Kadmon, and say, what is man that thou shouldst remember him, seeing that he will assuredly sin before thee? Said God to them, if ye were on earth like him, ye would sin worse. And so it was. For when the sons of God, Benai Elohim, saw the daughters of man, they fell in love with them, and God cast them down from heaven. These were Uzza and Azazel. From them the mixed multitude, Hebrew for mixed multitude is Zerah Rav, derived their souls, and therefore they also are called Nephilim, because they fall into fornication with fair women. For this God casts them out from the future world, in which they have no portion, and gives them their reward in this world, as it is written, he repays his enemies to their faces, citing Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 10. So what we find here is we find angels having sexual intercourse, divine beings, let's put it that way, divine beings having sexual intercourse with human beings. First we have Samael, through the agency of Nachash in Gan Eden, having sexual intercourse with Hava, Eve, from which are produced the evil and partly evil lines of Cain and Abel. Then we have, from that second generation on, I guess starting with the third generation on, starting with the descendants of Cain and Abel, we have the angels who've been cast out of heaven, the descendants of Uzza and Azazel, who had sexual intercourse with the descendants of whom? The descendants of Cain and Abel, but not with the descendants of Seth. For the descendants of Seth remain pure. They do not mix their genetic and spiritual material with anything that is not pure. So the Nephilim, the fallen ones, the fallen angels, Uzza and Azazel, and their group of angels that followed them, their followers, who were cast out of heaven, were now on earth, and they saw the daughters of man, which would be all three of them, the daughters of Seth, the daughters of Cain and Abel, and all their descendants for seven generations, but were only able to have to marry or at least have sexual intercourse, whether they married or not, it doesn't matter. But they had sexual intercourse and impregnated the daughters and descendants of the female descendants of Cain and Abel. So already the line of Cain and Abel, because of Nachash being in them, are already have evil in them. But then more evil is placed into their line, into their descent, because of the angels Uzza and Azazel and their followers. So even more evil is introduced into that line, into those two lines. And as it says, these were the and from them the mixed multitude derived their souls. Okay? And therefore they also are called Nephilim. So in other words, the mixed multitude can be called in general the Nephilim, the fallen ones. Okay? All right. So we have these three lines going. The pure righteous line, the line of righteousness descended from Seth, which has only the spiritual genetics of Adam and Eve. And then we have the fallen line of Cain and Abel and their descendants, made even further or more evil through intercourse with an injection of spiritual genetic material into them, the daughters of Cain and Abel. All right, and their descendants. Okay, so here we are in the seventh generation with three spiritual / genetic lines going. Okay, the righteous, the wicked, the holy righteous, the holy wicked, and the mixed righteous and mixed wicked. Okay, and it's in the seventh generation. Now, I taught last time that the number seven indicates the completion. Indicates completion. Well, it indicates completion of all the lines of spiritual genetics that are in conflict by the time of the seventh generation of man in the world. So what I'm saying is there are seven lines of spiritual genetics. I just told you that there were three, but you're going to see that there's really seven. Okay, so it's the seventh generation of man. Enoch is the patriarch of the seventh generation of the righteous. But there are seven. Also, not only seven generations, but there are seven lines. Okay? Here's what we have. We have the line of the righteous, descended from the pure seed of Adam through Seth, represented by the patriarch Enoch. We have the five sections of the Heir of Ra. Remember I read from the Zohar last time? About the mixed multitude, descended from the evil seed of Nahash through Cain and Abel. Here's the five sections. The Nephilim, these are the sons and daughters born from the intercourse with the daughters of Cain and Abel, the female descendants of Cain and Abel, who had intercourse with the fallen angels, the sons of God, the Nahi Elohim. Okay, so that's one section, the Nephilim. There's the Geborim, and the Anakim, the Rephaim, and the Amalekites. And I'm not going to... I'll tell you this, the Geborim are the mighty ones, the ones that do great things in the name of Israel and in the name of God. They build temples, synagogues, universities, courts, all kinds of wonderful... So on the outside, the appearance is wonderful, but on the inside, they're totally corrupt and rotten because they don't do it for the benefit of God and for God's children. They do it for themselves, to make great and mighty names for themselves, to acquire power and wealth. Okay, and there's the Anakim, the Rephaim, and the Amalekites. So there's five sections of the mixed multitude of the Heir of Rav. Okay, one line of the righteous from Seth, and that makes six, and then the seventh is the Benai Elohim, the sons of God. These are the fallen angels. So we have seven lines of being in the world at the time of Enoch. One line of pure human being that's righteous in its nature, which through Abraham and later Jacob will become Israel, the Jews. This is the line of Seth. Okay? One line of fallen angels who are bent on sabotaging God's plans for creation and man. And five lines of beings who are neither wholly human nor wholly divine, but whose paternity is mixed. They are almost entirely driven, however, by the evil urge. The urge to destroy the righteous line of Seth, to bring down from within the house of Israel. Now, that's what's going on. Those are the characters on the world stage at the time of that the patriarch Enoch walked the earth. Remember, they were building a tower to reach to the heavens and to show how great and mighty these are, the Geborim that were leading this effort. They were arrogant. They had turned their backs on God. Okay, they were almost, and as it says, almost every thought in their every thought in their hearts was eternally was only on evil eternally. Okay, so Enoch was up against it, but if that weren't bad enough, I mean, look at this. What is it? It's six lines of people against, who are dedicated to destroying the one line of Seth, the righteous. That's not bad enough. Consider this. Remember when I taught about the earliest book, the earliest revelation of God's wisdom that's ever happened? And that was the Sefer HaRaziel, the book of the mystery of God. And I'll just quickly read this from the Zohar, page 137b in the Sansino edition. It says, Rabbi Abba said, here's what he said, God did indeed send down a book to Adam, from which he became acquainted with the supernal wisdom. It came later into the hands of the sons of God, the wise of their generation. And whoever was privileged to peruse it could learn from its supernal wisdom. Okay? Well, so here it says right here, the book that the angel, that Raziel, okay, who was known as the master of God's mysteries, Baal Razim, the master of mysteries. This book that was given to Adam when he was expelled from the Garden of Eden had in it God's secrets, God's wisdom, his esoteric knowledge, things, if you will, that could be used for magical, theurgical purposes. Okay? And what does it say? It says right here, it came later into the hands of the sons of God. That's one category. Well, who, we just learned, who are the Benai Elohim? They are the fallen angels. So after they were cast out of heaven and they came down, this would be between the time of the second and, or between the third and the seventh generations, the book of Raziel came into their hands. This means that copies were made in manuscript form and were circulated. And at least one of those copies came into the hands of the angels Uzzah and Azazel, and others of the angels that followed them. That's not good, because this incredible book of magic and power and secrets of how the universe is made and the forces in the universe and how it operates falls into the hands of evil angels who have been cast out of heaven and whose sole purpose exists in throwing a monkey wrench into God's plan for the universe and for man. And it also falls into, as it says here, the hands of the wise of their generation. The wise of their generation. These are those who have acquired chokmah, wisdom. The sages of the time. This would be people descended from Seth. All right. So it's not looking too good for the line of Seth. Outnumbered 6-1, and up against angels, fallen angels, who and evil people who have mixed spiritual genetic material from evil angels, and who also possess the secrets of the book of Raziel. So it's not looking too good. Okay, now, you might say, well, why did God allow all of this to happen? He made this world knowing that there was a part of his mind that was going to do everything it could to mess it up. So why did he allow this to happen? Well, God has a way. God has a plan. Now, I want you to think about this number 7. Now, I had not revealed this to you. I had not taught on this before now. And to my knowledge, what I'm about to teach you has not been taught or revealed before, to my knowledge, anywhere. However, I'm going to tell you that my amount of knowledge, the amount of knowledge that I have is pretty pitifully little. Pretty puny, okay? And anything that I teach you has been revealed to me, either by my teachers or directly by Ruach HaKodesh, by the Holy Spirit. And what I'm about to teach you now has not been taught to me by my teachers. Part of it has. The first part of what I'm going to say has. But the conclusion that I'm going to bring out, the second part of this, has not been taught to me by my teachers, but has been revealed to me by the Ruach HaKodesh. So, to my knowledge, this is the first time it's been revealed. Now, if I'm correct, lucky you. If I'm incorrect, still lucky you, because you probably haven't heard this. But I would say that it's quite likely that this isn't the first time it's ever been revealed by the Holy Spirit to anyone, to any mystic. There's so much material that has not yet been translated that are in libraries and museums around the world. That have been written down by mystics and Kabbalists. And so I'd say, you know, it's probably likely. It's very unlikely that I'm going to reveal anything that's totally original. But anyway, having given you that caveat, I'm now going to talk to you about this sense of completion that we talked about earlier that has to do with the seventh generation. All of this is coming to a head. You've sensed this as I'm teaching in the last couple of days, and especially today. It's the seventh generation. It's the time of completion. Seven is the number of completion. It's time for something to begin to happen. Okay. Here's another way, meaning or significance to the number seven. There are seven sense openings in our heads. Seven openings for our senses, the physical senses in our heads. Two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, and one mouth. Just happens by coincidence to add up to seven. I think not. There is no coincidence. We, after all, as I just said, were made according to the blueprint of Adam Kadmon. And Adam Kadmon, that blueprint, was modeled after the divine form and image or image and likeness of God, Elohim. Okay? So, it's on purpose that there are two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, and one mouth. Now, why did God, or what else do we know about this, about these ears, eyes, nostrils, and mouth with respect to Adam Kadmon? Now, remember, we taught, as I mentioned just a little bit earlier, that Adam Kadmon is this blueprint that exists. If you had a diagram, which I certainly hope all of you by now have a diagram of the Etz Chaim, the Tree of Life, the diagram of the 10 holy sephirot in front of you. You've got the 10 sephirot on it. Well, off of that chart, above it, up in between where Ein Sof, the holy transcendent God, which cannot be described or imagined by mankind, between that, that's the source, the source. Okay? In between the source and the diagram of the 10 sephirot is Adam Kadmon. Adam Kadmon, primordial man, who was made in the image of God. Okay? God made Adam Kadmon first. Then he set about making the rest of creation. How did he do this? Okay. We are taught by Rabbi Chaim Vital, the foremost student of Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Arizal, that when God set about to create the world, he made Adam Kadmon first. And then he set about making the rest of creation. He did this by drawing forth light, or emanating light, from each of the seven openings of the head of Adam Kadmon. So light came out of the two ears and began to form circles, vessels. And light came out of the two eyes and began to form circles, spheres, or vessels of light. And light came from the two nostrils and formed two more vessels. And light came from the mouth and began to form circles and vessels. Okay? Then these lights, excuse me, these circles would be two-dimensional. They're not two-dimensional. They're actually infinite-dimensional. but we can't perceive that. So I'm going to say they're like three-dimensional circles that make them spheres, okay, of light that had skins of light, then began to fill because the light continued to come out of the ears, eyes, nostrils, and mouth of the head of Adam Kadma, and it began to fill those vessels with the light of creation. We call these vessels the Kelim. And it was an attempt to create the Sefirot. Now, I don't want to say attempt because that is not the right word. But anyway, we call these the Kelim, HaKelim, HaKelim, the vessels. But the spheres were not in harmony because the light coming out was not adequately separated. And so imbalance set in. And the light kept coming out and was out of harmony, and the imbalance increased until finally everything shattered. It all shattered. Okay, now this event is called by Isaac Luria in Lurianic cosmogony. It's called Shevirat or Shevirat HaKelim, and that means literally the shattering of the vessels. And the light that had been contained in the vessels and which formed the skin or the shells of the vessels went flying in all directions. Now, most of it went back up to Ein Sof, but a lot of it, and these are the sparks, the Nitzadzat, and the shower of sparks went flying out and then went falling down into what's known as the abyss. And the shards enclosed themselves, the shards of the skins enclosed themselves around those lights that had been contained inside and trapped them and lives off them. And this forms a parallel set of ten sephirot, parallel to the tree of life. And this is the tree of death. This parallel tree is the tree of death. And there's actually a gate to that tree that's on the tree of life. And that is Hod. That's the Sefirot Hod, H-O-D. And if you go through there, you can go into the tree of death, or likewise, you can call forth from the tree of death the powers of evil, the powers that would destroy the world. Okay? All of this from the seven openings in Adam Kadmon. Okay? And this is called the Shevirat HaKelim, shattering of the vessels, and it all came because it was not balanced correctly, and there was no separation of evil from good. Okay. Now, this is the shattering of the vessels. There were seven openings. The light came out. It was imbalanced. Good wasn't separated properly from evil. Okay, the dark light was not separated properly from the holy light. And so everything shattered and collapsed. And it's as it says in the Zohar, in section 1, page 25b, it is in this way that God created worlds and destroyed them. And it says, namely, those who do not keep the precepts of the law. Not that he destroys his own works, some fancy. For why indeed should he destroy his sons, of whom he has written, Behar Barim, and it goes on and on, and it starts talking about the five sections of the mixed multitude. Okay, so what we're talking about here is that this number seven is a symbol of completion without perfection. And what's going on in seven generations in the world is that's an allusion to, that's a revelation of what's going on in the divine mind of God in the creation of the world, in the creation of the universe. It's the pre-creational world. It's one of the worlds that God made and then destroyed. And of course, that's where this is all headed, isn't it? Because at the time of Enoch, seven streams had come forth, seven lines of beings in the world. Some of those, one of those lines is, only one of those lines is pure human, as God truly intended, or hoped that there would be, and as God knew that there would be later on. But one of those lines are fallen angels. That's his doubting principle, the principle of doubt, the principle of opposition, Samael, and Uzzah and Azael. And five other lines are those lines of beings who are infected by God's doubting, God's opposing principle. So we have the seven lines of being in the world who represent the seven openings in the head and face of Adam Kadmon. And they are mixed. They're called the mixed multitude. The five lines of the beings that are not wholly human or wholly divine, they're mixed. They're the mixed multitude. And then the one pure line which has to survive, and the line of fallen angels. So what does God do? The vessels shatter, right? The worlds are destroyed. They're destroyed. And in the biblical narrative, this is represented by the deluge, the great deluge, the flooding of the earth. And of course, what's destroyed, wiped out, are the angels, the fallen angels, the Nephilim, because it's always referred to in the past. In those days, the Nephilim were on the earth, and they lusted after the daughters of man. Okay? So they were wiped out in Noah's flood. And all except for Noah, who is the great grandson of Enoch, are destroyed. So the five lines that constitute the five sections of the mixed multitude are destroyed, wiped off the face of the earth, and all animals except those that God has Noah put into the ark, and the fish of the sea, they survive. So all except those are destroyed. But we will find out, not really. Not really. Or there would be no sin on the earth at this current time, right? And I'm not going to go into it at this time. We'll cover that when we get to talking about Noah, or if it's more appropriate in another teaching before then. But anyway, I wanted to relate to you that this number of seven is a number of completion, but completion without perfection. It's a part of God's creation of the world. He created one world and destroyed it. He did it to destroy the evil within his own mind. This whole entire thing, this psycho, is a psychodrama being acted out, and in the divine mind. On the stage of the earth, with man being one of the actors. And so it's an attempt by God to purge himself and the world and man, who's made in his image, of the doubting principle, the principle of adversarial principle, the principle of opposition. Samael. God is trying to remove that part of his mind so he can be one. So you can be single-minded, not double-minded. And that's what this whole... And why does he want to do that? Because that principle of opposition has infected the entire creation. It has corrupted the entire creation. From the time of Gan Eden, when Samael rode on the back of Nakash, like he was riding on the back of a camel, and he infected... he impregnated Hava, mutually co-impregnated her, I should say, with Adam, and the result was Cain, totally wicked, and Abel, who was half the time good, half the time bad. He was a follower. He never had his own mind. He'd just do whatever seemed best at the time, according to who he was listening to. Okay, so right from the beginning, the principle of opposition was put in came into creation. Why? Because God had to have a mechanism to purge that principle. He had to get the evil, he had to shed his evil skin like a snake sheds its skin. And that's what this is all about. He gathered all of the evil, got it together with the righteous, and then he separated the good from the evil. He commanded, first of all, he took Enoch up to heaven, remember? He only lived 365 years, whereas the rest of the patriarchs were living 700 to 900 years. So he lifted Enoch off the face of the earth, and then he commanded Noah, his great-grandson, to build an ark and to take into that ark his sons and their wives and Noah's wife. And so they did. So he separated the good from the evil. Evil being all the rest of the inhabitants of the earth. And then he destroyed the earth. That's the shattering of the vessels. All right, I think I've made the connection. I hope I've made the connection between the seven generations on the earth broken into seven lines, seven generations, seven lines, and seven beams of light coming out of Adam Kadmon that bursts the vessels, the Shevarit HaKalim. This is the purging mechanism by which God purifies his creation, purifies his own divine mind, in an attempt to get to make everything be only good in order to share his perfect goodness with the other called man. All right, that's all that we have for today's teaching. I apologize for running late. But anyway, I'm glad that we covered this topic. And we will be teaching live again on Wednesday at the same time. And don't forget that if you want to hear this again or have friends that you want to hear it, you can come to the rebroadcast, same room, tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And in the meantime, don't forget to remember God at least twice a day. And until we meet again, may you go from strength to strength and be well. Zeigeist.